Hey everybody, welcome to episode 42.
All right.
Let's go with 42 of Breaking In. We have a very special guest here today. You're not going to understand a fucking word that he says.
We might have put subtitles, we're thinking.
Can we put subtitles?
Yeah.
did you want me to speak in Spanish?
No!
I can do that.
Rather than introduce him, I'm going to sort of give the backstory of how we met Juan. We went to the Inktip Pitch Festival. Cheryl was at one table, I was at another. It just so happens that my counterpart at the table was Juan's counterpart. So anyway, we all basically ended up, Cheryl made friends with Juan, I made friends with Ron. We all ended up hanging
Juan
out.
Juan and Ron. We got Juan and Ron that night.
Yep.
And so Ron is a fairly established actor, just had a show on CBS, so he's busy doing other things, and we're going to get kind of into the backstory, but Juan, you were working for kind of a crazy dude at a certain point.
Yep.
We'll skip over that story. But in order to, I want to preface the show this time by saying it's going to get a little nerdy, it's going to get a little technical. You're probably not going to understand everything, but I promise you it's going to be completely fascinating. So, that being said, Juan, what the fuck do you do?
Okay. Yes, a good...
Well, the easy answer is that I do post-production.
Sure, yeah, okay.
I mean, I started a long time ago being an animator. I moved into compositing and ended up being a visual effects supervisor. And after a few years of that, I started moving into finishing. At the time was just doing color grading, finishing. And that was a few years into that, it's when all the whole 3D thing broke loose and everybody started.
When was that?
Started doing 3D in 2009. I mean, there has been people doing 3D forever, for 20,
sure.
30 years in
pictures,
right. In all sorts of things.
3D isn't a new thing.
But,
no,
it's
but,
not
it,
a new
it,
thing.
But it is a new thing.
But like the new
it's
version
evolved.
Of...
Yeah.
It's
evolved tremendously.
But it's like the new version of 3D where it was actually something that could happen in production that had been standardized, etc., etc. And I use one of... I use a very unique system. It's a system called Mystica, which is... there are not that many in the world. And it's the best system to work with 3D pictures. I mean, it's the system.
And you started doing this in Spain, right?
I started doing that in Spain. I had my own studio in Spain, and I came to the US because the first system was sold in the US, and it was the crazy people that Manny was talking about before, which came from a music background. They didn't have any idea of production or how to handle a movie and stuff, and they were doing.
They wanted to. So we'll let's just do the brief overview of the crazy person. So this guy had a lot of money, wanted to do a 3D concert film, ended up buying the system,
mm-hmm.
which is not cheap.
It was
the only system in America,
mm-hmm.
and you were one of the only people in the world that knew how to use it.
Yep.
So he brought you over, you started working, that I met you, I'm gonna guess you were a year into that project?
Probably.
When I met you?
Probably.
And we've been friends for 2 years, and you've pretty much just gotten out of that project. It's a never-ending suckhole.
What's funny, though, this is a true Breaking In story, because literally you came here, so you worked on this system how long in Spain?
For 9 years.
9 years. You come here to work on the system. Within 2 years, now you're working on Star Trek.
Yes, I am.
That's not going to happen anywhere else.
Okay,
Breaking In is going to happen here in California. That's how that happens.
So before we get to Star Trek, let's kind of just follow the path. So you're working for Crazy Person.
Yep.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember distinctly you had to turn down The Hobbit because you were
still working for Crazy
you were working
Person.
For Crazy Person.
It was kind of an interesting thing. I came to work for Crazy Person for 2 months, And then I went back to Spain to work on my studio. And then this crazy person decided to go into principal photography again to shoot more. He wanted me to supervise the shooting of the
TV. And what, just as a brief, funny anecdote, what year was that?
That was November 2010.
Okay. Juan just told us at brunch he has gone back into principal photography again. So we know where that's going. Anyway, so Hobbit, you're 2 months, you went back to Spain.
Yeah, and at one point it was like the Hobbit was getting more mystic as to finish the movie. There was another studio in Germany who was also getting a mystic and they wanted me over there. And then this guy called me that he was finally going into principal photography and he wanted me again. And in a matter of a week, I had to decide if going to New Zealand, going to Germany, or coming to LA.
Do you regret the...
No.
No,
because the reason why I decided to go with crazy person number one is...
her number one.
Crazy person
crazy.
Number one.
Yeah.
The reason why I decided to go with it is because it was LA. And because I thought that there was many more possibilities over here that it would be New Zealand. Because New Zealand, it would be a great job. It would be a marvelous project. And
but it's just a Hobbit.
But it
would be a one.
It was going to be...
It.
I'm going to be vanished from the face of the... Earth
yeah.
and Middle Earth
yeah.
for 3 years. I'm gonna be like in three quarters of the Earth.
Right.
Yeah. I'm gonna be banished, and that's my daughter. That's my best job ever. Eva. That's the best thing I've done in my life.
Also 3D.
Yeah, she's 3D too. Yeah.
Totally 3D.
And it was like, I'm gonna be banished from the face of the world for 3 years, and then what? And Germany. I mean, I'm from Europe. I know how that was going to kind of be. And not every day you have an opportunity to come to LA.
Right.
I think you made the right choice.
And I think in the long run, it was going to pay it off. And it has.
Yeah.
So okay. Well. So now I'm just trying to... I want you to fill in the gaps because I'm just going based on what I remember through our conversations. So at one point, you called in to... essentially work on two different movies. You fixed some of the 3D for Amazing Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
and you also fixed some of the 3D for Prometheus, right?
Yeah, what I was in on Amazing Spider-Man, when it was Sony Pictures, I mean, like Sony Imageworks, got into Mystica, and they were kind of doing the first tests and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
I was kind of there when they were doing the first test and showing them how to work with the system and all of that stuff. And it was like just a few weeks. And for Prometheus, it's a funny story because the studio who was going to do it, they also just got the system. And they had just one job with it, which I did as a freelancer. And the people from Prometheus bring the four worst shots that they had on the movie to see if they could be saved.
Mm-hmm.
So they called me in. These people came with the shots, and I fixed three shots in like 5 minutes.
I love doing shit like that. I love doing shit like that. Oh my god, this is little, all screwed up. Yeah, 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 here it is.
Yeah.
Little did they know. Little did they know the problem was actually with the script. But that's another story.
Well, that's a different story.
That's not his fault.
It's not my fault.
You did your job right.
Nobody asked him on the script.
No. They did not. So what happened with it is like the guys didn't even want to see the fourth shot. I mean, after we went through the three shots, we were like, okay, that's
good.
Fine. Cool. So they gave 42 minutes of the movie to that company who never called me again. And they struggle as hell to be able to make it on time. And I know that eventually they went borderline bankrupt kind of thing.
Nice.
But it's another one of those stories. I mean, that was my thing with Prometheus.
So moving into what you're doing now. So you're technically working at Bad Robot.
Mm-hmm.
You just finished editing. Well, I'm sorry.
Finishing
Star Trek Into Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Any trailer that any of you have seen, either during the Super Bowl, international trailers, TV ads, trailers of the movie at the movies, you've done.
And he would also like to apologize to everybody in Australia for the version of the movie that you got, because it was put together with duct tape. Seriously, if you don't see tape marks in the movie, that's amazing.
Yeah, we barely survived that one.
Yeah, that was a double.
That was kind of fun.
Down to the wire.
What I've done on the trailers, I mean, we have had many, many wonderful editors for the trailers. Different trailers came from different editors. And what I actually do is I put together the final version of it. Like the editors and everybody in the movie and everything, everybody works with Avid Media, with low-res versions and stuff. And I'm the one who grabs all the high-resolution scans, high-resolution VFX, the final 3D shots, and put it together as a movie or as a trailer.
And you have to get the best of the best of what they have, not the crappiest of the crappy that they have.
No, definitely. I mean, we have to just, it's like when you're going from offline to online. I mean, in offline, you are with the low-resolution, et cetera, et cetera, and with online, you go to the highest quality, biggest resolution that you can have. And on the trailers, I also did all the 3D balance of the trailer and the grading of some of them.
So let's, so now that we've kind of gotten through your career in 10 minutes, let's kind of dive into the nitty gritty, because I've had plenty of conversations with you where you've explained the 3D thing. And number one, I think the first thing that I actually want to ask you about is the difference between a movie being shot in 3D and then this whole like George Lucas thing where, oh, I'm going to take Star Wars, the original 1977 movie, and make it 3D.
Colorize it. Yeah.
Or what James Cameron, you know, Avatar versus taking Titanic and making it 3D. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of, because you've explained it to me before and it's horribly fascinating, explain the difference between
shooting it in 3D and transferring it to 3D later.
When you're shooting a movie in 3D, I mean, first of all, I have to say that I'm a big fan of movies shot in 3D, and most of my work has been with the movies and projects properly shot in 3D and manipulating that, because you can get more details, more subtleties that way. It has its own problems for sure. I mean, you have to manipulate the images, and the way you shoot it with the cameras can introduce certain geometry problems that you have to compensate for. But the difference, I mean, answering your question before I go into, I mean, that I have a tendency to just kind of
go ahead.
When you're a movie that has been shot in 3D, it has been shot with two cameras. The reason why it's shot with two cameras is because we have two eyes. If we had three eyes, it will have to be shot with three cameras to be whatever
that makes
we
sense.
Call it. So you have one camera for the left eye, another camera for the right eye.
Are they literally positioned like together, like literally together?
Right next to one another.
It depends. The thing is, there is a problem. There are different tendencies. The distance between the cameras, the distance in between the cameras is called either interocular or interaxial. Okay, the problem is that most of the time the cameras are so big that they cannot be put together enough.
Close enough.
So what they do is they use a beam splitter, which is basically like a mirror in between them. So one is vertical, the other one is horizontal, and you have like a 45 degree angle mirror in between. One of the camera looks through the mirror, the other camera reflects on the mirror. So you have to line them up really, really, really
finely. Has anybody seen an old school camera with the mirror conversion in it?
Yeah, when you look down.
What you can, but right, they're so big that you can actually see the mirrors set up inside the camera.
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean,
the 3D rigs are huge, and that was one of the reasons why, until Red came up with the Epic camera, and Silicon Imaging with the SA2K and other smaller cameras, it was extremely difficult, almost impossible, to be able to have something like a Steadicam in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? She likes it. It was almost impossible to have a Steadicam in 3D because it would be just too heavy, you know? And there are many, many decisions that you make when you're shooting in proper 3D, because even though logic will tell you that you just put the cameras to the same distance that you have your eyes and all 3D should be fine, the reality is that it won't. Because in real life, when you're focusing on an object, you're kind of discarding whatever is behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It's blurry, you don't look at it, and you're basically moving your eyes, just turning your eyes to look at some object in particular.
Focus.
In the screen, you cannot control where the people is going to be looking, so you kind of have to compress the space. Sometimes you'll use your cameras closer than the human size are. Sometimes you'll use the cameras more separated because you want to extract volume. So there's all those decisions that you have to make.
You know, that's interesting because I find myself during the movies doing, like, I find that there's times I don't need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, it just split into a different view, so now I don't need the glasses to mm-hmm. see it in 3D kind of thing. It always baffled me why it bothered my eyes for it to be on, and I had to really raise my glasses to watch it with my eyes.
The main issue with 3D, converted or not, is that it has to be comfortable. It has to be watchable. It has to be comfortable. And if it's not, it gives you headaches. People feel nausea. They feel dizzy because it's just not working. It's like if you were not able to see properly through one of your eyes.
I know,
right?
But everybody has different eyesight. That's an amazing thing to do.
And it's
to try to compensate for everybody's
eyes. It's a tricky thing to kind of make it in something that it will work for everybody. And
right.
That's the part where you
yes.
have to really tweak it and work with it. When you're doing a conversion, in the other hand, what you're doing is that you're getting an image that is already been made, or maybe you're shooting in 2D and you know you're going to convert it anyway, but you start from a 2D image and you have to create the 3D. You have to create the 3D as in you have to create the volume. You have to guess. You have to create a virtual camera. Let me put it that way.
If I remember how you described it to me is, and I remember having this discussion, at the time they were doing the conversion on Star Wars and you had seen some of the images, and it's a 2D image, so trying to describe
that's
this.
That's what I'm trying to think
right.
of how you change a flat image.
So because
into
it because
3D.
It's you take
this is like stretching it.
So let's say for example you have a TIE fighter in the front that's in space with the Death Star in the background.
Okay.
You take the Death Star, you make that a layer. You take space, you make that a layer. You take the TIE fighter,
so
and make that a layer.
So you're literally just stretching.
So, yeah,
it
you
out
you have
by
to take
image.
Each image and this is going to be
that,
this
is that
this,
it?
This
I don't
is
going to
be this is going to be layman's terms, but you're literally taking each aspect of the image and photoshopping it.
You're creating cutouts.
Right, cutouts.
That's the simple way of doing it. That's the most simple way of doing it. And that's the way that it started being done at the very beginning. Like when you just cut out parts of the image and just put them at different
planes.
Depths.
Yeah, depths,
it's just
yeah.
different depths. Because you have two virtual cameras, the way the objects are in respect with the others, depending on what camera you're looking through, it will make a difference. It's like when you if you put a finger and you can all do this right now when you're hearing this.
Everybody
if,
ready?
If you put a finger in front of your face, like I don't know, like 20 inches or 10 inches in front of your face, and you close one eye and
yeah,
open
right.
the other, then you will see
it
that
moves.
The background behind it changes.
Right.
I mean, like the finger is in the same spot, but the background is moving.
It's like when you're drunk and you're driving home and you have to close one eye to bring the picture
Let's not promote drunk driving, Cheryl.
I've never done that, I've heard.
Yes, right. From Lindsay Lohan. Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, close one eye. It brings everything into 1D.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can just go. That the difference of the different imposition between the objects, it's called parallax. And when the parallax changes, that's how your brain interprets. When the parallax changes between your eyes, is how the brain extracts the 3D information from a scene.
Okay.
Now, when you're doing the cutouts, that is great, but they are gonna feel like cutouts, especially
right.
the things that are close to you. They're gonna feel it's gonna feel
what
like it's
the,
flat.
What was the thing you told me? There was a you told me something very specific about how you could find out if a movie was shitty 3D or good 3D. Didn't it have something to do with the image in a mirror? Was that it? You told me there was a thing.
Oh.
Where pay attention for this and you know whether or not it's good or bad.
Well, one thing that is extremely tricky to convert usually is, it's reflections. Because the way a reflection behaves,
Like in a mirror?
It's
okay.
Like if you look at a mirror will look deeper than the
yeah.
mirror actually is,
yeah.
right? And when you're converting the movie, there's so many things that you have to take into account that sometimes things like reflections and stuff like that are kind of left out.
So somebody
left
has to
out.
Look at the whole freaking scene and make sure
you have to break
there,
down
yeah.
the whole freaking
wow.
scene into elements and do it. And the truth is that since we had that conversation, the quality of the conversion has risen dramatically. I mean, there are people doing wonderful.
That's amazing, because we just had that conversation a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So that's how fast it's moving.
There are actually movies that are half 3D and half not, right? Mm-hmm. Because I know there's been movies where like it's 3D and then I can raise my glass and go, oh, there's no 3D. This is now regular.
There's always a little bit of 3D. I mean, the problem is that some scenes, if you have like a big, huge general shot, the difference in 3D are going to be so subtle, they're going to almost be
you almost not
perceive. But it's the same way if you look at a landscape. You don't know. I mean, you know the mountains on the back are on the back on the little house that you see on the bottom, but you cannot tell. I mean, you can guess the same way you could guess with a 2D picture how far are they,
right?
But you don't have 3D information out of it,
right?
Because they are too far away and they just doesn't make any difference.
Are you happy movies are moving to 3D? I mean, obviously, I'm not talking to just
pay my bill.
Shut up. I know. But as you're a film buff, you love watching movies and B movies. He's a big B movie fan. Are you happy? Would you be happy if all movies turned into 3D?
No.
Okay.
No, I think for me 3D, it's a tool like everything else. It's like color. It's like many other things. It's like why Steven Spielberg chose to shot Schindler's List in black and white.
Right.
Right.
When we're in the time of color, because for the story it was better, because the story demanded to be black and white, or why some other director will use crappy lenses and doing it in film, maybe even 8mm to get all the dirt of the thing when we're in the digital age, because the story demands it.
Video.
To make it gritty, yeah.
Or video, or GoPro,
yeah.
Or cell phone.
Yeah.
I think every story deserves the best way to be told, and the best way is not always the most technologically advanced. Is the way that story demands to be told in the most truthful way.
And on that note, Avatar, yes, 3D, get it. Great Gatsby, really? Do we need that in 3D?
Dancing and moving stuff in 3D is cool. I mean. It's like everything else. I haven't seen Great Gatsby. I've heard people saying it's to shoot yourself for. I've heard people saying that it's great. I haven't seen it. I cannot tell.
No.
Let me put it this way.
Talking about 3D. Like, you know, Star Wars, Star Trek.
I saw a trailer in one of the. You know, I work in post-production and I have a kid, which means I don't go to the theater that much.
Yeah.
Even though I make the movies, but I don't watch them. So I just watch Joe Gabba Gabba and Bob Squarepants. So the thing is, I watch a trailer of this movie, and you're all going to laugh at me, Step Up 3D.
Shut up.
I've seen it.
Fucking
no.
Loved it.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff that they were doing.
I mean,
but there is a difference between. Okay, so like for example.
But let me put it.
Okay,
let me
go ahead.
Point. I mean, there is a point where the 3D has to serve the story, and sometimes the 3D has to serve the show. You know, and in something like Step Up 3D, when it's dance and it's rhythm and choreography and camera moving around, the 3D adds that dimension of seeing. The end scenes, everything that it enhanced the movie.
That's a version though, and here's where
I might want to see it now.
I have it. We can watch it.
Not 3D now.
No, but that is a perfect example of filmmakers pandering to 3D. I mean, they're literally.
We all want to be 3D.
They're literally dancing to the camera. Blowing smoke into the.
Why is that a bad thing?
Well, I don't know.
It's like saying, look at that guy. He has a big car and he's going fast, motherfucker.
No, it's.
No, I mean, okay, let me put it this way. A gimmick only works for so long. And it's something maybe for a theme park or for showing a technology. But if you have a technology that allows you to do those things and people is entertained by it, isn't. It's movies fine. About
it's
entertainment.
As it's not exploitive. When you see a movie specifically going like...
And wait, hang on.
To the camera? I
have a perfect example.
Okay.
Because I'm
hanging on, Manny. Go.
Is, I forget the movie. I think it was...
Then that's not having an example.
No.
He's just so adamant. Sorry. Hang on.
There's a movie that opens. It's in 3D. I think it's a Pixar movie. And it's... the guy's sitting there talking on the phone and he's playing with a paddling ball. And it's, oh, now I'm going to do it to the audience. And the ball is in our... That's pandering to the audience. That's...
Mm-hmm. It's too exploitive. That's right. It's being too over the top. If it happens naturally, I'm hoping Step Up did. I don't know.
I only watched the trailer.
If you watch Step Up
in 2D... You can tell every single instance where they're
ridiculous pandering.
But
the thing is, that's a good thing, because the problem with 3D and 3D conversion and all of that, the main problem is that most of the people, I'm not going to say most, but a lot of people doing 3D movies, they do not understand 3D. And they're doing a 2D movie in 3D, which is the worst thing that you can do. And that's one risk that you have when you're doing a conversion movie, when you're getting a movie that was shot for 2D and just putting in 3D. Some movies work in 3D better than others. Like, for example, a movie like Jurassic Park that they just recently converted to 3D.
Right.
I will want to watch Jurassic Park in 3D. And just so you guys know, I was invited to freaking watch it in IMAX private screen, and I couldn't go because I was doing Star Trek. So you guys better enjoy it.
And he didn't pass his tickets off to us, obviously. So
I did not. it was for Bad Robot only, sorry.
Yeah. I got you.
So, But the thing is, there are movies that demand 3D better. Like, there's a very interesting story about how they did the Avengers, and it's a movie where they knew they wanted to make the movie 3D, and it may be because of a commercial thing or whatever. But the thing is, they knew they wanted a 3D movie, right? Mm-hmm. And they were in a position of saying, okay, cool. So shall we shoot it, or shall we convert it? And they went through many tests to see what kind of freedom they had with both things and how comfortable the director was feeling and all of that. And at the end, after also seeing different conversion tests, they decided to go with conversion, but knowing that they were going to do conversion.
The reason they shot the movie differently.
Specifically.
The reason why this is important is because they shot the movie to be a 3D movie. And knowing that they were going to have conversion, they did things like shooting clean plates and shooting things that makes the conversion easier.
Yeah.
Or it helps the conversion. Because the thing is...
Oh,
okay,
my God.
So
they were prepped?
Yeah.
God, that's insane.
It's madness!
Who did that?
Madness! So, when you think about converting a movie and doing all the cutouts that we were talking about, it's like, okay, so you have your TIE fighter in front of the... Let's say it's not a space. Let's say it's a planet. You have your TIE fighter and you're gonna move your TIE fighter a little bit to the left. Okay, what happens with the background that it was covering?
Right,
it has to be painted out. That background has to be recovered, and if you haven't shot a clean plate, that background has to be recreated.
So you put no ship in, and then you have something.
That's why conversion. It's such. I mean, and that's why we have seen some not that great conversions, because the thing is, there's so much work involving converting a movie that sometimes, I mean, you never finish a conversion. You abandon a conversion when it's good enough.
The cost difference in shooting in 2D versus 3D?
The cost, I think, is comparable, because
so it's literally what they're losing.
Converting
if they shoot
a movie to 3D properly is not cheap. I mean, we are talking about something between, I would say, something between $2 to $5 million. Depending on anything else that you're doing. And if you think about camera equipment and camera crew, just having an extra camera, an extra rig and all stuff, it's probably going to come up more or less for that.
Right.
You know, it's a matter of how, both technically and artistically, how comfortable is your crew, your director, your producer, your DP and all of that with the technology. Because then we have the other case. We have things like Life of Pi, which was entirely shot in 3D. Mm-hmm. So when you shoot in, and they decided to go and shoot it in 3D, because they wanted that, and they were
that was beautiful.
They were doing a lot of gimmicking, and they were doing a lot of using the 3D, but they using it smartly, doing smart transitions. At one point in the movie, then it's like, okay, screw it, we're gonna make the movie scope, and we're gonna have fishes jumping out of the screen because it's cool, and because
pandering.
It's 3D, and because we want
pandering. Yeah, let's make a 3D reason.
But why is that a bad thing?
Because
it makes
me stop immediately in the middle of a beautiful shot of a lion attacking a human, and now you're going to throw a fish at my face?
No, but the fishes were jumping inside of the screen. I mean, they were not jumping towards you.
I don't remember that being a bad scene.
It depends on the movie.
Pampering, maybe.
That's never happened before.
You made a comment that the people that were deciding to whether they shot 2D or 3D was what were they going to lose in creative process by shooting. What do you lose if you shooting in 3D?
When you're shooting in 3D, you're carrying a bigger rig, a bigger camera rig.
Yeah, I mean, it goes
so
to steady camming.
So mobility. It's the quickness.
And also, there are other things that you have to take into account. I mean, when you're doing 3D, it's not point and shoot. Is what's the distance between what we're shooting to the camera? Do we have to adjust the cameras or not? So it's a process of something.
Is not going to necessarily work so cleanly with 3D. That's going to be a tough shoot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, because I've never actually seen a 3D rig, but based on what your explanation, I'm thinking of like early cinema where it's originally the first time you're panning.
First pan.
Yeah.
With a huge thing. And how do we make a smooth pan?
And we've mastered making 2D digital cinema smaller and easier to carry.
But
3D's not there yet.
So nobody's made a 3D camera. We've literally duct taped in two cameras together.
Well, I mean,
you
could.
With a mirror in the middle.
Yeah. No, the reason why you need the mirror is when the cameras are too big. I mean,
I know,
if they're not big enough.
They can't even. That's so cumbersome. It's like going back to.
Okay, so people, Juan is actually showing me
a 3D rig.
A 3D rig. And that is, yeah. That you're not strapping that on your shoulder and filming a wedding.
And running through a street. You're not running through streets or hallways.
There's no running.
Shit.
No, there's no running.
You're not.
Dang.
But then you're going to strap two GoPros together and do that.
Yeah.
The image quality is not going to be great, but it's that's your movie needs.
Well,
the image quality or not.
And the reality is, just going off of the seemingly joke about duct taping two cameras together, but that is, you can make a 3D image off of that.
Yes. Absolutely.
What is this? Oh, is it? Oh my God, is this 3D GoPro?
Yeah, it's a guy with two GoPros on his helmet.
Okay, people, I don't know how to explain this, but let's just say this guy looks fucking ridiculous.
He looks like he's trying to keep out.
I mean, you just
Mars
glue two GoPros to your helmet and jump at a cliff and hope for the best.
Right.
He's got ET on the top of his head. Basically, it's an ET. It looks.
Yeah.
Big
it's
eyes,
two cameras, right.
Big eyes on the top of his head. Wow, that looks heavy. That looks seriously heavy.
So, going...
I have a question for you guys.
Okay,
you're asking me the question.
All right.
I have a question for you.
Fine.
You guys have seen the Star Trek 3D trailers?
Yes.
Yes. In 3D?
Yeah.
No.
No. Haven't you seen anything of Star Trek in 3D?
We can't watch anything in 3D.
Oh, you know
not
what?
With this
no,
one.
No, no, no. Yeah, I hate 3D. Personally,
we're gonna go see. We're gonna go
see
Star Trek in 3D for you.
I love you.
I mean,
but
maybe you like it.
I'm gonna let you know.
This is actually. I'm glad you asked this question because this is actually.
So the question I want to ask you is: do you think Star Trek has been shot in 3D or converted?
Hang on.
Let's ask us that after we see it. Okay, after we see it.
Here's the thing.
The trailers look beautiful.
Yeah, well, I mean,
but you have seen it in 2D.
I know. So I don't know. I couldn't tell. Right?
This is actually a really good place of where I want to take the conversation. I want to bring it kind of personal. It's like this one, pointing to Cheryl, can't watch anything in 3D. We've sacrificed based on your recommendations. Like we saw the Avengers in 3D. We saw Pirates in 3D. That's it.
Pirates? I didn't recommend Pirates.
No. Actually, no. That was at the cusp, the cutoff line,
uh-huh.
where I had I had dragged her to see all of these 3D movies.
And then half of that movie, Pirate, by the way, was bullshit. Is not in 3D. Yeah, I had my glasses on my head, and then I had to drop it for when they went 3D.
And then you and I had drinks at the Cat and Fiddle, and we talked about Pirates, and I brought that up, and Juan's like, that's bullshit. You need to see this, this, and this. And so then our pickiness, if you will, we didn't see Iron Man 3 in 3D.
Fuck that. It was fucking awesome. And it was fucking awesome.
I haven't watched it
yet. You don't have time. Yeah. You're too busy watching Star Trek.
You 80 times. Over and over and
over. Juan did the math. He told me at brunch, he did the math the other day that he's seen Star Trek Into Darkness about 80 times.
He's so fucking sick. I can't believe. Okay, and on top of that, he then invited us to go see it with him in a movie theater. And I'm like...
But for the record, you weren't there for that okay. for this part. Okay. But for the record, he wants to see it for the first time with popcorn. That's why we're not watching. That's why we're not watching it at Bad Robot. We're watching it at the theater.
not only that, I want to be able to watch it without saying we have to change that because we're going to change anything.
No, that's going to be like, our job.
He's done. He's gone. That's it.
We already told him it's going to be our job all during the movie. We're going to go, hey Juan, you probably should have done this for that. Hey Juan, you know what? No, I will not do that.
One very interesting thing about Star Trek Into Darkness, and one of the reasons why I think people is going to love it.
Let's just get into it. Why don't you just spoil the movie? Let's go.
No.
So
no! I mean, point. No! Kirk dies.
It's a roller coaster. It's a roller coaster. It's after watching it 80 times, after seeing it so many times, I still enjoy the movie. Which is
that's
something
so good.
Which is very interesting because sometimes when you're involved in the project so closely and you see how he has been changed, how they change dialogue, how they ADR that, how they change that scene over there and whatnot, being able to watch it, like I remember I went to watch it, I went to Deluxe to QC, one of the 2D DCPs, and I was watching the movie all together from back to back with the final mix for the first time, and I was at several points on the movie. I had to Juan, you have to be paying attention to see if anything is wrong, you know, because I watched
right. So even on the 80th time, you were still sucked into the movie.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It has great sequences.
Well, look, I mean,
I'm very excited.
Let's we can sort of get into this. This is going to be sort of opinion based, but in turn, I mean, JJ turned that franchise around. I mean, we were joking about it at brunch. The original Star Trek movie is fucking horrible. It's long and boring.
But
and
Juan and I love V'ger.
The first one I like.
We love that.
It's a different kind of science fiction. And the thing is, all the Trekkies that are out saying, "Oh, JJ has murdered Star Trek and this and
bullshit.
That." First of all, they're too young to remember, and they don't remember the original fucking series because the original series
is horrible.
It's besides it being horrible or not, it's about adventure. It's about adventure. It's about being out. It's about this. It's about that. And they took it as far as they could take it with the technology and with everything that they had. And for me,
I was a Next Generation kid.
This is a more truthful kind of thing. And Next Generation is more like paused. It's more about thinking. It's more about other things. But Star Trek was more about the adventure.
Adventure, yes.
You know?
Guy with big eyebrows, Spock.
Spock. Zachary Quinto.
Was on Bill Maher the other night. And he said, Star Trek tries to represent what's going on in society at the time.
Yeah.
So, because Bill Maher was like, this is very dark. And he's like, yeah, we're representing what's going on in society right now. So I'm sure you'd love us to be all light and sparkliness, but that's not what the real world is like.
So you're making the argument that action movies are darker? Because I believe that's what I said last week that you disagreed with. Just pointing that
out. My rich consultant.
He said Star Trek is darker.
I know, but
no
Star Trek is an action
movies.
Movie.
Yeah, I'm just saying. No, Gene Roddenberry's vision was always to look at what society was doing.
In fact, Star Trek had like one of the first, if not the first, interracial kiss that was on TV.
Yes, it did.
I mean, it's always been kind of that
on the forefront.
It's been always trying to be in the forefront because it's depicting
it's supposed to be the forefront. It's literally supposed to be.
They're trying to reflect society and how we're trying to deal with it as an evolved civilization.
Going back to JJ and sort of revitalizing it, and the I guess the point that I want to make with the first one is that for the first time, I mean, Star Trek always had a very niche audience, super nerds. And yes, we are in a day.
I disagree with that.
Hang on. The problem is, I don't think super nerds.
I don't think Star Trek has had super nerd audiences. I think Star Trek has appealed to a lot of people. The problem is that the only ones who got like extreme with it were the super nerds.
But sure.
Almost everybody has seen Star Trek at one point in their
life. Oh, no, I agree.
You know, other thing is them admitting it.
Whether they paid for it in the theater is a different story.
There's two things that I think have happened is, number one, the super nerds kind of control the world now. So it's way more cooler to, you know, play chess and video games and read comic books than it was when we were kids. And then the other thing is that I think JJ found a way of, and by the way, yeah, we're on a first name, first initial basis with JJ.
No, he's just pulling the shit out of his ass.
I'm joking. I'm being sarcastic.
Sorry, JJ.
So,
Mr. Abrams.
Mr. Abrams. I'm sorry.
I think what he's found a way to make Star Trek more universal, where it's not necessarily about the subject matter, but it's about the ride. So more people are. It's Armageddon.
They're getting Armageddon-ish. They're getting. But let's do some real adventure. Let's do some shit's going down. It's gonna be Die Hard in space.
This is gonna seem like an insult, and I don't mean it to be. But I think JJ has found the smart way of doing a Michael Bay version of Star Trek.
I disagree. The thing with Star Trek is that at least Star Trek. I mean, I don't know if you're referring to the first one or not, but at least
I'm referring to the first one.
Okay,
it's just more universal.
At least on this second one, for me, this second one is way more character based. As in, one of the reasons why the movie is such a roller coaster and it takes you from one act to the next, is because everything that happens makes sense. Like the kind of situation that they get into is not like they go for the adventure, let's get and do this because of that.
We want to kill these people.
The situation get them into something, and then when they're doing that something goes wrong and they have to do this other thing, and then, oh shit, we have to and then we found this, and oh my god, and then the movie end credits.
So it's reactions.
You know, so it's all about something.
Spoiler alert, Juan.
The movie has credits.
Did you guys get that? Shit happens one after another.
And then they have to do this.
Exactly. Can you keep that from your friends if they haven't seen it yet?
So it's like, and I like that about the movie, because it's not like, hey, let's make up something in the middle of this just because to keep the movie going.
Yeah, storyline.
It's like one thing leads to the other. After the first part of the movie, it's like everything leads to the next thing. And I like that. And I think it is very energetic, and it has a lot of it has a lot of energy in the way it's telling the story, but I don't see the explosions in slow motion just to see how it explode.
Okay, let me rephrase it. You know what I mean? I understand the flaw in my argument. So let me rephrase it. JJ has found a way to make Star Trek a tentpole picture. I don't think Star Trek has ever been a tentpole.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
So that's what I was referring to as making it a Michael Bay.
It's had its following, and you knew those people.
But now it's kind of spread. People are looking forward to everybody, its opening
like
on
everybody, like not know, just Star Trek fans.
Right?
Dance.
Yes, that was the point that I was trying to make.
As a side note, if you guys have the chance to watch it in IMAX, you're gonna be able to watch a movie. I mean, the whole movie has been designed for IMAX. Let me put it that way.
You'll be sitting in the middle of space.
Kind of thing. I mean, we have done something in this movie that Christopher Nolan did for The Dark Knight when he released for IMAX, which is we're mixing formats. I mean, every interior of the movie, its scope, which is the kind of
letterboxed
for everybody.
Yeah,
like kind of wide way of looking at the movies, but you know that
I can't see your hands.
The IMAX screen. I know that's why I'm trying to explain it, but I cannot talk without moving my hands. You know, I'm Spanish. So, the thing is, the IMAX screen is taller, so all the external shots are actually taller.
And so, that's actually what Christopher Nolan did, right? So if I remember correctly.
Yeah, on The Dark Knight.
Yeah, The Dark Knight Rises.
We're going to go see it in IMAX, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, yeah, that's what we're doing.
Okay, okay.
IMAX on 3D.
IMAX in 3D.
Yes, I totally agree. Are you kidding? Do you think I'm going to nix your work, dude?
Jeez. I've suffered through every single pixel. Yes.
I will suffer with you.
There you go.
Put those fucking glasses on.
I kind of want to move the conversation to sort of the future. I think that going back into the beginning of this story, where your choice to move to LA and things have happened for you. I don't want to jinx anything, but I want to point out the reality of your situation. The reality of your situation is that you've ended up with working at Bad Robot, working on Star Trek. While you're working on this movie, it just so happens that it is announced that JJ is doing Star Wars. You are not working on Star Wars. It is nothing is official, but there is a possibility
it
could happen. The idea of opportunity. And we were talking before we started recording, is you recently went up to Pixar. You recently had the chance to stay at Skywalker Ranch. Fuck you.
And, Skywalker Ranch, fuck you.
We both said that as soon as we found out.
And just so many doors have opened because of...
The one decision.
The one decision to come here to LA.
That one.
And sort of translating this into screenwriters, they're... We always say you can't really be a successful screenwriter unless you're here in LA. Mm-hmm. You got to be here. You got to because this is where the opportunity is.
You can't phone it in from Minnesota.
And you're absolutely right when you talk about your idea, like the concept of thinking about working on The Hobbit. Working on The Hobbit would have been amazing, but it's literally one film being made in one country. Here you're working on everything. You're working on Star Trek, and oh, by the way, there's like 80 other movies being made here too.
And also, I think the most important thing of it all, it's the networking. You literally never know. You never, ever know who's going to come through that door, who are you going to meet, and under what circumstances. Like, for example, and this is a complete this is a funny anecdote. So, we're doing... In Bat Robot, we have a theater, which is where I usually work. But the theater serves multiple purposes. That theater sometimes is we use it for audio mixing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we shoot stuff there. Most of the pickups of the movie have been shot on my fucking office.
That's on the funny. Theater.
One full scene of the movie has been shot over there. We also use it as a workroom for meetings. I mean, all around the room, you have whiteboards that come up and you can. Plan, plot, and do whatever you want.
Which is super awesome, by the way.
Totally
you
should
want to show this pictures, and if there's ever a way to create,
yeah,
it's having
that
a
looks
wall,
like the room.
A wall of whiteboard.
Okay, so imagine your average movie theater, and now imagine the walls of that movie theater having whiteboards along it.
Yeah. Make notes.
And all the chairs move. I mean, we don't have a theater with fixed chairs. I mean, we can actually pull all the chairs out. And in fact, in the morning, they pull all the chairs out and they have yoga. That's for real. And days that I've been working an all-nighter, I've been there and the yoga teacher will come up and I will say like, oh, we have yoga. It's like, no, you don't. But anyway, before I get lost, so there's this theater which is where I usually work, but because it serves multiple purposes, I have another room set up with a smaller screen where I can still where I can also work. We have to work at two systems at the same time, and at the other side of that across my room, the room at the other side is where Alfonso Cuarón was finishing the pilot that he did for Bat Robot.
Yeah,
Believe.
Yeah, right.
The pilot that he was doing for Bat Robot, and he was over there, and at that moment, I have a shot of the movie in the screen that I'm not gonna describe what it was, but it was kind of interesting to look at. Mm-hmm. So he actually sent a PA to ask me why I had that on my screen. So I went back and I told him that I was on shot of the movie, and we started chatting for a bit. So out of the fucking blue, I was talking with Alfonso Cuarón.
Right.
About something completely normal human being asking a normal human being question. And then I was outside. I went for a coffee. When I was coming back, I started talking with another guy who happened to be the executive producer on that show. And he was like, oh, yeah, I have to hook you up with Alfonso. He's like, well, we were talking the other day. Oh, that's great. Then we have to do dinner. Out of the blue.
Right.
So, and that has happened to me in LA multiple times in multiple situations. The fact that you go to somewhere
because you're there.
Pitch Fest.
Yeah.
Manny has never found a script that he would ever want to make.
Yeah.
But the contacts that we made at Pitch Fest,
you guys,
yeah. I mean those are invaluable. Those, yeah.
And yay. And the reality of being in the thick of things is that, yes, we are all here working, and you never know who you're going to run into.
Never.
As you were saying with the trip to Pixar and Skywalker, that just kind of fell on your lap. Like, hey, we're all going to go do this. You want to go?
You want to go?
Exactly like that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
And the answer is yes.
Yeah. I think suitcase, yes. By the way. Yeah. Just saying.
Let me pause and think. Yeah. I also want to say, I just want to kind of put this on air. It is super badass and awesome to find out that J.J. Abrams is the very cool, super nerd, down-to-earth person
that we always hoped he would be.
Like, he, you know, there's always that thing in Hollywood where it's really, you don't want to meet your heroes because they turn out to be pricks. He is clearly not.
And just likes making geeky movies.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with what he's done with Star Trek, and I'm looking forward to see what he does with Star Wars. And what Joss has done with the Avengers, and what Shane Black just did with Iron Man, I feel like our generation of comic book readers and TV watchers and
computer nerds, gamers, and blah blah blah, it's things, all coming to a head.
Yeah, and
we get to say so.
They're making movies for us.
Yeah, I agree.
Our fan base.
Yep.
And given the fact that we are no longer the minority, that's super badass.
I agree.
I want to wrap up the show. Dude, thank you so much for doing this.
Pleasure.
We had so much fun at breakfast. It was a good breakfast.
And your friendship has been completely invaluable, and I'm so happy. Let's just take 2 minutes to blow one another. I'm very happy for you.
When
we met one another, both of us were at very shitty jobs in our life,
mm-hmm.
and we have since found new territories and have gotten sort of
rejuvenized.
Yep. And I'm so yay that you're doing stuff. And I know working 65 hours a week sucks, but
I wish I was.
Getting your wife here.
Yeah, that was another big one.
Dude, there was like second day she was here, we went and had Chinese food.
Yeah, it was literally.
She just got here. She's huge and pregnant, and yay, you made it. Good, yay, you're together. Bye.
I'm going to tell one funny anecdote about Juan, which is hysterical, because I've never been a parent, but this is a first time parent. I recognize this as like, really? Okay, you don't know how it's really going to go. 2 weeks before Heidi gave birth, you and I were having a conversation at a party. And you're like, hey, guess what? Heidi's mom is coming into town, and she's going to be babysitting. And so after Heidi gives birth, we're all going to go to Disney World and hang out. It's going to be great. We're going to have a day. And I'm like, no, you're not.
No. He didn't say that. He told me about it, and I laughed my ass off and went, he's adorable. He's not going to do that for another 2 years. I don't even know what he's talking about.
The good thing about it is that now when we go to Disney World, the baby's actually going to enjoy it because she will be able to understand
it. Not yet.
Yeah, she does.
2 years.
I know. She's 2 years.
She hasn't been. But what I mean is that she's going to
I was there when I was two.
2 years old, she's going to be like, like insanely excited. Right now, she'd be like, get away, Mickey Mouse. Don't take my glasses. You know what I mean?
That Disney trip is still on the books,
sir. I'm just telling you, 2 years old. Cool. It was just adorable that he was like 2 weeks after the baby's born, we're going out. I was like,
well, now that you're like hanging out at Pixar and shit.
I went once. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, yeah. I went once. Now I might go another time.
Now that you're blowing all the guys at Pixar.
You know.
Fine, Juan.
I went once.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you get success. People get jealous about it. So, dude, thank you so much for doing the show. I know you're super busy. Look forward to Star Trek Into Darkness. I don't think there's anyone who's probably not going to see it who's listening to the show. But correct. If you're one of those people, go see it in 3D. Look for Juan's name. What is your official title?
The official title of the movie is The Eye Supervisor.
Yeah, so look for that guy.
Basically made it up. But
yeah. Good for you. Hey, I've had positions created for me, too. So.
Yeah. Because I've been doing a little bit of everything for the finishing. But right. It's been crazy.
You're super awesome. Thank you very much for breaking in this week. I'm Manny.
Cheryl.
Until next week. And then there's one.
Gee, he can't say goodbye?
No, I can't. No,
it's one in a million.
Manny's a boy.
Till next week.
Peace out.
Bye.